Welcome to God's Perfect Plan Session 2. The notes and recording are posted on the website. If you missed or if you want to go back and review it, as I said in the announcement, Sunday, a week ago, a lot was laid out in that 2 hours of time, more than realistically can be covered. So now we're going to kind of slow down a little bit and dig into certain aspects of things. Hopefully, this will start moving us along and you'll see the tie-in of everything that we laid out in the beginning. The notion of this class is not marriage counseling. So if you're coming hoping, you know, we'll fix every issue in your marriage, that's not what we're here for. That's what marriage counselors are for. We have trained people for that. You have those types of problems, you should go to them. I'm not saying it won't help your marriage, but I'm saying the purpose of this is we basically have a traditional or fleshly or worldly view of marriage. And what we want to have is a biblical view of marriage. What was God thinking when he made you? What was he thinking when he joined you with somebody? I believe if we get a better understanding of God's purposes in creation, in the way he created, in all the things that he established, we'll have a better understanding of how to function and make all those things successful. So that's really the goal, is to give forth knowledge that you guys can apply to your lives from what the Word has to say. So I'm going to be talking briefly about roles within the marriage. Some people call them gender roles because tradition has suggested genders do certain things. But I really want to get into what the Word of God says about it. One of the first challenges married couples face is expectations of who's going to do what within the marriage. Failure to come to some sort of form of understanding is one of the major causes of marital problems. Husbands and wives need to work out together how the family is going to operate and articulate it clearly in a manner so everyone's expectations are met. So how will decisions be made and who will make them needs to be answered. What is the role of the husband? What is the role of the wife? Now, there's lots of ways we can have ideas about this. There's many preconceptions of marital roles that are not always correct. And a lot of it is because we base it on things like, well, that's what my mom and dad did. Well, that doesn't mean they did anything right. You know? This is what I've witnessed. That doesn't mean you saw anything right. Truth be told, the only way we get a right picture of how things are supposed to be is the Word of God. Why? Because as we learned last week, actually the week before, the first session, God's the one that created marriage. God's the one that makes marriage work. Absent of that, you're going to struggle through it. So from the first class, you should be able to define marriage. You should be able to find your purpose. You should have some sort of understanding of what God was thinking when he made you and what God was thinking when he joined you with somebody. And if you're not joined with somebody yet, you should have a good idea of what God's doing in the midst of it before it happens based on the things you learn in this class. So God understands it better than any of you, any of us, even though I have 34 years, Terry and Marla are like 49.
Almost 50,
yeah. So combined, we're like 120, 130 years. So you would say we'd have some experience. I say we know nothing yet. Okay? God's the one that knows it. So what does his word say about it? I would tell you that surprisingly, not much. But it does provide some foundational principles that I think are most relevant when discussing what roles we play within the marriage. Now, Ephesians 5, 22 through 33 talks about Christian households. I'm not going to take the time to read it. Go ahead and read it yourselves. Starts off with submitting to one another. Then it talks about husbands, love your wives, and it goes on to list out a whole bunch of things. And then it ends up with, as Christ loves the church, because he's really talking about Christ and the church. So, within that, Paul does something pretty much not normal for the culture of the day. He calls for husbands to love their wives. Particularly in the self-sacrificing way that Christ loved the church, which was a radically new concept, even revolutionary in its implications. Sacrificial love is in itself a form of submission. Paul was talking about a love that would elevate a wife to equal status as a person in her husband's eyes. Now, you say, why is that relevant? What's relevant is if you understood the culture of the day back then, women were subservient. They were not equal to men. So you don't necessarily have that in our culture today. You don't necessarily have traditional roles in marriage today. Those concepts have radically changed from the time when Paul was writing. The words love towards a woman wasn't really a concept that was talked about. You know, they were there for use. Okay, so the idea of Paul saying agape your wife was a radical concept. You need to understand it. Because in our day we say that and you're like, yeah, duh. You know, this was a radical notion. So at the most basic level, a husband and wife should relate to each other through mutual love and submission rather than through a set of predefined roles. The closest this passage comes to defining marital roles is to say that a husband's role is to love his wife, agape his wife, in a sacrificial, self-giving way, and a wife's role is to submit to her husband as to the Lord and to respect her husband. These roles are reciprocal. Any husband is truly faithful, who is truly faithful to do his part, will make it easy for his wife to do her part. Likewise, any wife who has a husband who loves her in this way will have no problem respecting him or submitting to his headship. Essentially, marriage is a roleless relationship. It can be no other way if the marriage is truly grounded in agape. Sacrificial love is unconditional love, love without reasons. I really enjoyed studying this part of it because my wife would always say, why do you love me? I'd say, if I had a reason, if it changed, I wouldn't love you anymore. So really, I was just agapeing her. Love without reasons. See, God does not need a reason to love you. He loves you because that's his nature, to love you. The love of Christ is roleless. It's based on response rather than expectation. See, love that looks for a reason is love with conditions attached. Conditions give rise to expectations. Expectations lead inevitably to disappointment. Disappointment leads to arguments which strain the relationship, which then endangers the fellowship. Marital love is supposed to be like the love that Jesus has for the church. Unconditional, sacrificial, without expectation or guarantee. Fixed marriage roles create expectations, and expectations imply guarantees. So love without reasons is love without expectations. So if there are no expectations, then there are no fixed role. So, for example, if I go in the closet and there's no clean clothes, and my expectation was my wife was going to have done the laundry. I'm disappointed because I have to go to work naked. And so are a lot of other people. Marriage then becomes a relationship based on responding to needs rather than adhering to rigid preconceptions. If a husband and wife have no rigid role expectations of each other, neither will be disappointed. A response-based approach to marriage will bring a deep, fresh, and new dimension to the relationship. Marriage couples will experience greater success and happiness the more they learn how to relate without fixed roles. See, when I grew up, this stuff wasn't talked about. And I've seen it in the midst of how we even do church and how it's changed throughout the years. Because everybody had a position, and that position had an expectation of assignment, a role to perform. So then if someone didn't perform the role good, the only thing to do was to get rid of them and put somebody else in that position to fulfill the role. That's really how marriage has worked. People have expectations. People let each other down. They get rid of that person and go on to the next one and hope that one fills their expectation. And really what each one's doing is setting themselves up for disappointment. That's not how God designed it. Now, immediate thought should come to mind then, how does anything get done and how does, you know, life happen if nobody has any expectation of one another? Well, a roleless relationship in a marriage does not mean that nobody does anything or that couples take a random or haphazard approach to life. It's extremely important that you come together and create a clear and mutual understanding of how things will get done. A relationship without fixed roles does mean that each partner will respond accordingly to need, ability, and opportunity. So a role is a temporary responsibility that is based on the ability of one who responds. As such, roles can change from day to day, from minute to minute, and from one person to the other, depending on the need of the moment. It is a matter of need, ability, and opportunity. Whatever the need, whoever is able and available at the time is responsible. Relating without fixed roles is a natural outgrowth of a marriage based on agape, and in which the husband and wife truly are equal partners. Agape expresses itself in conscious response to recognized needs. Agape seeks to help with a need, not criticize a failure. Agape doesn't look for roles. Agape responds to needs. Husbands and wives who approach their marriage from a biblical, roleless perspective assume full ownership of every aspect of their life together. There are no his and her roles, only our responsibilities. What does what or who does what and when depends on the specific circumstance. Each couple should arrive at a mutual agreement as to which of them has the primary responsibility for each task or need, understanding as well that ultimately they will share all responsibilities together. You know, it was interesting as I was going through this, and if you look at that passage, it makes more sense. But this way of thinking was really part of our move from a single headship to a plurality of leadership. Same principles, which shouldn't really be surprising when you look at God as foundational in everything that he does. Assignment of marital responsibilities may depend on each person's training, abilities, or temperament. Clear assignment of primary authority and responsibilities between a husband and wife establishes order and helps prevent chaos and confusion. At the same time, rather than producing rigidity in the relationship, it allows for flexibility so that whether partner can do what is needed at any, either partner can do what is needed at any given time. Wow. Whoever can, does. Whoever sees, acts. Fact is, I actually can cook myself dinner. So when I get home and I'm hungry and I have a need to eat, I can and I am able to respond to that need, even though most of the time I call somebody to take care of it. Whoever can, does. Whoever sees, acts. Sharing responsibility becomes even more important when both the husband and wife are away, when they're both working, when they have other responsibilities throughout the day. Each partner needs to take into account the schedule and obligations of the other, including those of work. Mutual understanding and cooperation are essential. It's also really important to understand the seasons you're in. You know, I can think of Caitlin or John or certain ones going through education. Okay, at the time of you're in a new marriage. And I can think of Ashton with work and his own self-employment business in the midst of a ever-bursting forth family, you know, and the challenges that puts upon Ellie to raise him and parent and all the responsibilities that come. You go through seasons.
Yeah.
Trust me, all the seasons change. So therefore, if you had fixed roles, even though the seasons change, you would think you're going to be doing the same things. And ultimately, other things would come up that would need to get done, and you'd be pointing the finger at one another. Then expectations aren't met, and resentment forms, and things aren't happy. So then, what is the husband's role in marriage? He is the head of the home. He is the spiritual leader, responsible before God for the spiritual direction of the family. He is to love his wife in the same way that Christ loves the church, sacrificially and unconditionally. What is the wife's role? She is to respect her husband and submit to his headship. That's the roles the Bible defines. In the practical matters of home and life, they should both respond according to the need, their abilities, and their availability. So we're not going to have a breakout session with this, but I am going to assign some homework for you guys. I would like you, if you're married, to assess the needs and responsibilities of your married life. Then I'd like you to look at what abilities and talents and availability that you have to contribute to those needs and responsibilities. And once you've done that individually, I'd like you to come together and just discuss them with one another. Now, if you're single, I want you to identify what you plan on bringing to the relationship. Because God has already deposited things in you that you can grow in, talent and ability that you bring into the relationship that will contribute to the needs and responsibilities of married life. So it's a great time to start assessing what God has put into you. So when you start, even before you're married, you guys can start having these types of discussion as you look at what type of married life you want to have. So I'm going to give you guys a 2-minute break and grab snacks or whatever. You can jot down notes, and then Bob is going to be coming up to run the next rest of the session. So primarily, we're going to go through two sections. We're going to have two breakout sessions during that. Session one is going to cover the meat of it's probably going to be principles of purpose. There will be a little bit of stuff before that, a little bit of stuff after that. So all of it makes a lot of sense. And then section two, the second half,
will be more of the purpose for the man. So I know we had like a title of this whole program, right? But this is really diving into understanding men and a kind of a discovery or a rediscovery of purpose. So there will be next time we meet that we'll be focusing this type of stuff on the women. But there's definitely stuff in here for the women to get out of and understand this guy next to you, or at least some of you, that gets really confusing sometimes. So hopefully this will help you too. I'm sure it'll help you too. So if you guys have a hard time, there's some room up here if you want to come up. Hard time hearing me, because I already said I'm going to have a hard time projecting for this long, but I do have some water to help me project better. Yeah, okay. So rediscovering the masculine identity, we need to address a few questions. How can men gain their footage in an ever-shifting environment of cultural experiences? Expectations, they change through all of this, right? What does it mean to be male? What's the definition of masculinity? What definition of masculinity should men adopt? Why is a male self-concept so important to the foundations of society? What roles should men fulfill in the workplace and in the home? This is kind of an opener. What do general roles have to do with the male's purpose? Gender roles. I know we were just talking about roles, and like roles aren't a thing, right? Or that, well, role-less marriage. We're going to really talk into what the difference between roles and purpose too. So it comes at it from a little bit of a different angle. So don't get confused by me using the fixed roles. So don't get confused by me still using that term. It's different. Anyway, what's the difference between males and females? How are men and women meant to relate to one another? How can a man build a better life for himself, his family, and the world? So we're going to fix the world tonight. You ready? Woo! Okay, so what's a real man? What's a real man? Oh, yeah, no. So, well, that's true. So, the roles and rules of society are changing. Traditional roles were less complicated because they are predetermined by biology. Right? So when you look at men's roles, you know, traditionally they're kind of based on survival too. You know, men's roles were based on that survival of the wife and his family. She loved him because of what he did for her, for him, for her. He didn't earn her honor and appreciation because he was a sentimental and a romantic guy. She valued his provision, his protection. Very different, right? Life is completely different for men and women now because they're no longer utterly dependent on one another for their security and survival. It's even more difficult for some when traditional roles are reversed for them, right? So let's look at roles versus purpose. If this ultimately comes down to what makes males, you'll notice I use a lot of different times where we're referring to men and women and referring to males and females. You're talking a little bit differently about biology. You're talking about responsibilities and purpose and stuff. So understand that there is a reason for the usage of those terms throughout all of this. So because men have linked their identity traditionally to their roles, now that their roles have changed, they have left themselves with no basis for manhood. Whatever they replaced their old idea of masculinity with may or may not be true or fulfilling or a fulfilling role for them. What is more troubling, when men don't understand their place in the world, they will often either withdraw from it or even influence it in harmful ways, such as committing crimes, getting involved in stuff that they shouldn't be getting involved in. So what can men do to regain their footing and identity? First, they must adopt. They're going to adopt it. First, they must adopt an entirely new way of thinking. They need to think in terms of purpose rather than roles. So there we go, getting away from the roles. The reason why they're having problems today is that they have been basing their worth on the wrong thing. Roles that have been the true basis of man's identity and purpose. The role can be helpful and harmful, but ultimately they merely reflect culture and tradition. So the answer for males in the 21st century is therefore two: to find their worth based on God's purpose rather than society's roles, learn God's vision for their lives, and continue to live in the truth of what of who they are, were created to be. So if males understand this purpose and the responsibility God's given them, they're truly designed for that relationship with females. They can be free to fulfill their destiny and potential. They can be the men that they were created to be. So that's your intro-ish. So seven purposes. Seven principles of purpose. Get your cameras out. Hurry up. There you are. Don't write them down. I'm not going to give you enough time. Okay, moving on for some people. There you go. Try again. Somebody's head was in the way. One more?
Yep.
All right. I'm going to talk about them and go into each of them, you know, individually. But there's a lot there, right?
Yeah.
And I got to get through that, and that's only part one. Going. I don't want you to waste time writing it all out. So now you have it. So seven principles of purpose. Proverbs 19:21 is the foundational scripture in regards to understanding God's purpose. Many are the plans in a man's heart, but it is the Lord's purpose that prevails. This is a crucial truth. This crucial truth tells us that we can make our plans, but God's plan is the one that will prevail. We don't live up to our full potential, and we will not be unfulfilled. We may even pursue goals and engage in practices that are harmful to us if we're not getting into God's plan. We only have one life, and we want to make it count, right? Yeah. How are you using your life, men? Do the values that you have in place for your life, what do you value? Is it God's purposes? Do you know that one of the most dangerous things is wasting time? It is said that time is a commodity that you'll never be able to recapture. Once you've lost time, it's gone forever. What you've lived, you can never relive. Effectiveness does not mean just doing a good thing, but rather doing the right thing. So discovering our purpose enables us to stop wasting our lives and start fulfilling our potential. However, then, must we be careful? I said it wrong. However, then, we must be careful not to become sidetracked along the way. The greatest way to destroy someone is to distract them from their true purpose. So how many times have you heard of somebody that had, you know, they feel like God's telling me to do this, and someone says, oh, yeah, I don't know about that. You might want to be cautious about saying something, because if you're distracting them from a purpose that God's has set aside for them, how do you know that that's not the purpose that God's given for them? Did God tell you that that's not their purpose? So that could be pretty scary, is sidetracking somebody from the purpose that God has put in place for them. When you understand these principles, you'll be able to learn and live in your purpose. Mm-hmm. So I already showed you, I'm not going to repeat them all again. First one, God is a God of purpose. Isaiah 14:24. The Lord Almighty has sworn, surely as I have planned, so it will be. And as I have purposed, so it will stand. Mm-hmm. Psalms 33:11. The plans of the Lord stand firm forever, the purposes of his heart through all generations. So jot this one down. Isaiah 5:10-11 and Hebrews 6:16-17. All talking about God's purpose and how it will stand. God has a purpose that he has determined beforehand, and when carried out. And these include plans for humanity as a whole and plans for males and females who carry out humanity's purpose to bring this to a personal level. This includes plans for you and me. God doesn't do anything on a whim. He knows the end result. God created everything with a purpose. Now we're talking about the second, number two. God created everything with a purpose. God created everything with a purpose in mind. He also created it with the ability to fulfill that purpose. Yeah. Everything God has made is the way it is because that's the way he created it. It starts with a purpose, mm-hmm. Right? You don't make anything without knowing what you need it to do and what it's for. Mm-hmm. So if God made it, he's got a purpose, and he knows what it's for. So that's why we go to him for the purpose, right? So God's purpose requires two genders to work together in cooperation to accomplish the mutual vision. Accordingly, males and females have complementary designs that enable them to fulfill God's purpose together. Make sense? Am I loud enough? Mm-hmm. Number three. You don't have to write the whole thing down because you already have it on your camera. Not every purpose is known to us because we've lost our standing in the original intent for us. We lost our standing in God's original intent. Although everyone and everything on the earth has a purpose, this does not mean that we are aware of their purpose. When humans begin as the human race, we turn their backs on God and his ways. As we learned about in Genesis 3, they ended up losing their knowledge of God's intent for themselves and for the world. And then number four, where purpose is not known, abuse is inevitable. What could that mean? Huh?
Can you repeat that?
Where purpose is not known, abuse is inevitable. So number four on your photo. How many people go into marriage very seriously? Most people do, right? They go to church, they stand at the altar, they look at their betrothed. I will love you until I die. No? Right? They're very serious. But then 3 months later, they die. At least their love dies because they didn't have a purpose. They were just serious. Then their family and friends try to figure out what happened. Their marriage failed because they didn't understand the purpose of their marriage, the purpose of their mate, the purpose of their family, because they didn't understand these things. They abused the union. People abuse things because they just don't know what the purpose or be, sorry. People abuse things because they just don't know their purpose or because they disregard those purposes. When males and females don't know God's intentions, they end up abusing each other even if they don't mean to. So if males are going to solve their current identity crisis and fulfill their purposes as men, husbands and fathers, they must discover God's plan for them. Otherwise, they will hurt those around them, even if it's unintentionally. Five, to discover the purpose of something, never ask the creation, ask the creator. The point of this, to understand how we function as human beings, as males and females, we need to go to the manual given to us by the designer and manufacturer who created us. Obviously, I'm talking about the Bible. The Bible. God knew exactly what he wanted and what he thought of male. Remember that he had created both male and female after he had decided what each should be in order to fulfill his purpose and plans. That he designed them accordingly to his purpose and plans. This means that he is the only one who knows humanity is, sorry, he's the only one that knows humanity's function and purpose. If you have a question about it, you need to check the manual. See, there's a lot of them, but we're hitting through them pretty quick. All right. Six, check your list. We need to find our purpose only in the mind of our Maker. We find our purpose only in the mind of our Maker. We need to understand that the mind of our Maker how we do this by learning how he thinks. The only way for us to succeed is by discovering and living for the purposes of our Maker, by undergoing his transformation in the way that we think about ourselves based on his original intentions for us. Transformation comes about by the renewing of our minds. So Romans 12, 1 through 2. Therefore, I urge you, brothers, in the view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is. Then you'll be able to test and approve that God's will is good, pleasing, and perfect will. God's ways will transform your spirit, your mind, and your outlook. When you present yourself to God and learn from Him, you will begin understanding His purposes. So, and then number 7, God's purpose is the key to our fulfillment. You can never be totally and completely satisfied until you find your purpose and then live in it. You cannot do what you're supposed to do until you discover what you're supposed to do. And if you do what you're not supposed to do, you're not going to be fulfilled. Fulfilled. You're wasting time. Don't abuse your life. Stop it. Stop it now. One more look. So those are the 7 principles. We really breezed through them really fast. We could probably spend a half hour on every single one of them. I just kind of took some highlights and some important pieces to it to really get through those 7 principles of purpose. As I said before, we're going to get into the purpose of man. So understanding this, having a brief understanding of that will help. Before we go into our first breakout session, I'm going to talk a little bit about the creation of man. Don't look at that side. The first thing we must realize is that there's a distinction between being man and being male. What did I say earlier? And each has a unique purpose for being. So what does this mean? The account of creation in the first 2 chapters of Genesis reveals the essential difference. Genesis 1 is a declaration chapter. It declares what God did in creation. Genesis 2 is an explanation chapter. It explains how God accomplished his act of creation and shows how the creation of man relates to the creation of man's 2 physical manifestations, male and female. So Genesis 1, 26 through 28 says, "Then the Lord said, 'Let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule them, rule, have dominion,' in the New King James, over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, the livestock, over all of the earth, over all of the creations that move along the ground." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it." So men can know the true meaning of their existence only by understanding who they are in relationship to God's creation and mankind as a whole. There is a distinction between being man and being male. Mankind was created in the image of God. God created man to be spirit as he is spirit. Man was created. Ooh, that was really bad. Man was created to be God's offspring, to have fellowship with him, to manifest his nature, to share his rule, to expand the family business, to rely on the Father for personal needs and for kingdom needs, and to execute God's righteous judgment. After God created man, he placed him in 2 physical houses, male and female. Man, the spirit man, resides within both male and female. God created man, but he made male and female. God made male and female, because he wanted man to fulfill two distinct purposes on the physical earth. So we're going to dive into, again, those purpose after. And next week we're going to hit on women's, right? So we're going to take how many minutes? 15? 10? 15 for breakout? So 90-second review. What is a real man? Yeah, that's a good question, right? Seven principles of purpose and the creation of man. Man's two physical manifestations, male and female, right? So we kind of covered those parts in this first section. The distinction between the men and women are physical and functional rather than their essence. So we're going to dive into God's purpose for male. It's kind of summed up in priority, position, and assignment. The priority, the man's order in creation, and what this means in regards to his reason for being. Position, the environment and place in which the man was to carry out his purpose. An assignment, the function or task that the man has been given. So, men, the male's priority. In order in which male was created gives us the first indication for the reason for being. Why did God make males first? It was not because the male was better. It was because of his purpose, right? So we're diving into that purpose, right? When you think about it, God really made only one human being when he created, then he created the female. He didn't go back to the soil. He fashioned her from the side of the man, Genesis 2:21 through 23. Only the man came directly from the earth. So this was because the male was designed by God to be the foundation of the human family. The woman came out of the man rather than the earth because she was designed to rest on the man, to have the male as her support. So this is kind of diving into that male function as the foundation of the human family. The foundation of society, the infrastructure God intended for the world, has been misunderstood. We often say that the family is the foundation of society. Will this help? It's very true that the family is the adhesive that holds it together, yet God did not start building the earth society with the family. He began it with one person. He began it with the male man. The primary purpose of males is to be in God's presence. Yeah, this goes, I know, you're talking your discussions, right? We'll continue. The male's assignment, this came up too. Visionary and leader, teacher, cultivator, provider, protector. We'll kind of touch on each one of these. But again, the primary purpose of the males is to be in God's presence. The complete man is still alone. The man needs a companion, not as a subordinate or a sidekick, but as an equal partner. Eve was God's idea for man. The male's perfect complement. The male's God-given companion. The male's suitable helper. I feel like we're going to be getting into some stuff on dominion versus domination. I'll touch on it a little bit. Kind of before we get into that male's assignment. Actually, Bruce even kind of touched on that stuff a little bit. Adam and Eve fell because they became dissatisfied with their position and role. They stopped looking to their Creator for their purpose and instead looked to themselves. They thought they knew their true purpose better than God did. Yet their rejection to God's plan brought them only heartache because they were not meant to live independent from God and the purpose for which He had created them. Satan is afraid of the power of a man and woman united in God's purpose. A distorted view of submission. Submission has nothing to do with force. It's an act of will. Jesus didn't tie a rope around our necks and dragged us. He led us and we followed. We're supposed to... That's our example, right? If male wants to be a true leader, he must lead. He must learn, who he is in God and become someone who earns respect. Someone who loves, who guides, who inspires rather than forces others to do what he wants. Moving to assignments. Male as visionary and leader. To have vision means to conceive of and move towards a purpose. The male is also designed to be the visionary. God created men to be able to look at the big picture in life, to plan for the future from a logical and practical standpoint. Men like to determine what steps are necessary to get from A to B and then all the way to Z. Right? They have built-in qualities that enable them to receive the vision and work to bring it to pass. Prerequisites for discovering vision. Many men don't have vision for their lives because they're not committed to God and to seek. They're not committed to God and to seeking His will in this area. If a man does not have real relationship with God, he cannot fully function in his purpose. What does it look like? Follow Christ's example. Acknowledge Christ's headship. Listen to God's direction. Be open to God's communication. Be in God's presence, right? If you're male, you were born to lead. After the male has secured a vision, he is ready for leadership. Some men want to run away from the responsibility of leadership. They look at it as too much of a burden. They let their wives run everything. Others want to selfishly pursue their own interests without worrying about the needs of others. Certain men don't think they deserve to be leaders. They think they have to be rich or highly educated to be able to lead. If you're male, you're born to lead. God made males first because He wanted him. He gave him that responsibility. Males don't decide to lead or not to lead. A male doesn't decide to lead or not to lead. He has his position by virtue of his purpose. The male is not the head of the home because he has to lead. He has to lead because he's the head of the home. His position is inherent. No male can sit down and debate whether or not he will lead his home, whether or not he will work for his family. It's not a debatable issue. So what are characteristics of a leader? Strong and courageous, obedient to God's commandments, a logical thinker, a servant's heart, a teachable spirit. So the male as a teacher and cultivator. If a man can't teach the word, he's not ready for marriage. simple. The Bible lays out simple ways of teaching your family. You know, talk about the Bible. Talk about these things when you sit at home. Talk about them when you walk along the road. Talk about them when you lie down. Talk about them when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them to your foreheads. Write them down on your door frames of your house and on your gates. You know, how many people do you know have scriptures on their walls in their house? That's biblical. It's not just decoration, right? You know, do we think that our children and our families are going to hear the word at church and that's sufficient? You know, we're not going to teach them anything. We're supposed to teach them all the time. We're supposed to be talking about the concept, you know, what the Bible says about situations all the time. As you're sitting at home, as you're walking along the road, as you're lying down, you know, I know one thing, you know, that we did is I always tried to pray with my kids before bed. You know, it gave them that opportunity to ask questions about stuff. You know, just opening up that little moment of time. You know, it was very precious to me and it was very precious to them. Males as provider and protector. We touched on this one too. God has given men the ability to provide for and protect everything he has entrusted in their care. Now, we talked earlier that God doesn't give a purpose that he doesn't give you the abilities for, right? This is what this is talking about. In Genesis 2:15, God gave the males the assignment to work. The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it, to take care of it. Work was given prior to the fall of men. It was not a curse. On the contrary, it was a great blessing. Genesis 1:28 says, God blessed the male and female and gave them dominion over the earth. He blessed them in all of their dominion assignments, including work. So work was given to the male, one, to advance the purposes of God, two, to bring the male fulfillment when using the skills and abilities God has given him, and three, to enable the male to provide for his own needs as well as the needs of those whom he's responsible. We have learned that the male's first priority is to remain continually in God's presence. This is through worship and communion with God that man receives life's vision, vocation, and work. Some men have forgotten that worship takes precedence over work. When your work interferes with your worship, you cease to fulfill the purposes of a real man. So before a man needs a woman, he needs work. Kind of a simple statement, but it's kind of a bold statement, right? If you're looking for a spouse, men, and you don't have the way to provide, stop looking, start working. That's what it says. Okay, I'll stop. God gave the man, not the women, the responsibility for being the main provider for the family. The woman is supposed to marry someone who is already, sorry. The woman is supposed to marry someone who is already able to provide. This is very important. If you look at the Old Testament scriptures, the way in which God's people married indicates what God's instructed them to do regarding matrimony. Now we talked in the men's group that the Bible doesn't talk a lot, correct me if I'm wrong on that statement, doesn't have a lot of scripture directly relating to, you know, this type of situation. But it does give example. If a man was interested in a woman, he did not go to her to get engaged. He went to his parents, more specifically his father. The resulting marriage contract included specific arrangements for the women's provision. The father would establish the standard of living that the man would have to provide for his daughter before he would allow her to leave his household. The prospective groom would have to show that he could meet this standard, or he would have to earn the money before he could have her hand in marriage. So, okay, now the flip side. Let's talk. Many women are working today, but some don't really want to work full-time outside the home. Women going to college and having careers has been a positive change in many ways. Women are able to develop their talents and abilities, and I know we'll get more into the women's stuff. We're not going deep here. However, they should be able to do that with joy and not stress. Many women are juggling many things today, like career, home, and family. That working a job becomes a tremendous strain on them and the rest of the family. Some women are stuck indebted in jobs rather than fulfilling ones because they feel the family needs the money to provide. They're not working at what they really like to do. In addition, when women start having children, it changes things a lot more too. The priority changes, and those that may have wanted to be working, you know, have kind of changed their priorities and they don't anymore. They don't have, and that makes it so that they don't have time to care for the husband and children. I know there are certain men who are becoming uncomfortable and discouraged. Not talking about men being lazy. There is hard economic times. You know, we kind of discussed this too. You understand you don't want your wife to work, but right now you need two incomes to make ends meet. Or right now you're trying to find a job. Don't be discouraged. You know, you can't change a financial situation overnight. We'll talk more about the financial stuff in future sessions. You just need to move towards the ideal. A man needs his wife to respect his desire to provide. He may not be the one providing her. It might be both the men and the women providing. But the man truly does need his wife to respect his desire to provide. So, male as protector. When God told Adam to take care of the garden, he was telling him, in effect, I put you in the garden not only to work and cultivate it, but also to protect it and everything in it, including the animals, the plants, and the woman I will create. You are the protector. Now, when a woman gets married, his husband becomes her protector, as his father was. Because of her nature, she needs the covering of protection. The male is to provide everything for her: security, covering, resources, counsel, the comfort of knowing that he's there for her. He's designed to protect. The male is a natural protector. Through these attributes, he is designed to protect everything that he's responsible for. His physical strength, logical thinking, his sense of territorial protectiveness, and his drive to excel, which technically can be called his ego. So men, commit to becoming God's man. Men must understand that they are responsible for their purpose assignments. We're not talking about those roles and stuff that we're talking about. These are assignments, purpose assignments. If the whole revelation hasn't hit you, as a male, I am the visionary, leader, teacher, cultivator, provider, and protector. Being the male that God designed you to be means all of these things. A male does not decide to work. He's designed to work. He does not decide to teach. He's required to teach. He cannot decide to protect. He's wired to protect. There is no fulfillment without satisfying your purpose.